coming up on today's show.
Joe and I are in the Big Apple. And speaking of apples, I'm starving. And Joe's been eating like a king. Can we get some lunch after this?
Not now, son. You're still training. Kyle Rudolph joins the show to dish some dirt on his QB, Kid Cuzzy, and also tells us why he does not like the nickname Kid Cuzzy. Sorry, John.
Locker room recordings, gambling per diem, and why Torrey Holt's instructional DVD did not make me a satisfied customer.
All of this and much, much more coming up on another College Football Hall of Fame edition of The Tomahawk Show.
Welcome to the Tomahawk Show, ladies and gentlemen, episode 100 and something or another. I know that because we celebrated our 100th episode a couple weeks ago. So here we are. And this is a special treat because not very often do me and Joe actually get to sit beside each other and do the show. And that's where we're at. We're in a hotel room right now in New York City, in Manhattan, in Midtown. We are about a foot apart from each other. Joe, how you doing, man?
I'm doing amazing, and I feel like it's my duty as your co-host, as your Batman, to you be my Robin.
Absolutely.
To let everybody know that you are absolutely the hardest working man in media, because you told me about your schedule yesterday, which was insane. Then you went right from Total Access and jumped on a plane, took a red eye here to New York City. As soon as you landed, I think you walked from LaGuardia into Manhattan to be with me here in Midtown, to sit in my hotel room on my couch. And you don't sound like you haven't slept in 2 days, which you haven't. And that's amazing. And that's a credit to your genetics, because
Thank you.
Hard work pays plays no part in this.
Well, it's funny because if you don't see that I'm tired, you don't see the effects. That means it's burning inside. So
that means the Mountain Dew is paying off right now. And yes, you're sweating out a yellowish substance that clearly I'm hoping it's Mountain Dew and it's not some type of disease that you've been infected with in the subways.
Exactly. So I'm in New York. Last minute trip to host Kneading Dough, our video series over at Uninterrupted. I'll be interviewing the man, the myth, the legend, Maverick Carter. And my hotel happened to be 0.4 miles away from Joe's hotel, who is in New York City to celebrate his 13th Hall of Fame induction. In the last calendar year. What Hall of Fame are you going into this time?
So this is a baby one. This is made up, actually, by myself.
Okay.
It's the College Football Hall of Fame. It's the one you're going to be inducted into next year for that great career that you had at Toledo. A lot of receivers in this class, at least one that I can think of, Torrey Holt.
That's a big one.
That was a big one. He went to NC State, which
Torrey Holt
was
owes me
pretty
money.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to tell him that tonight. So we had the little luncheon this morning, and then we have a little break. So, of course, what do you do on a break in between a Hall of Fame luncheon and the actual induction? You get together with your man Hawk and you do some podcasting in your hotel room like a couple of creeps. And so we're up here. But the best part of the luncheon so far was Rocket Ishmael, Notre Dame fame.
Yes, great CFL alum too.
Great NFL, great college player. Told us the story of how he got the nickname Rocket, and it was absolutely freaking hilarious.
He wanted to go to Toledo instead of Notre
Dame. He wanted to be a Toledo Rocket,
yes,
but they wouldn't offer him.
Right.
And so he decided to take the money and run and go to Notre Dame. They had a billion-dollar check on the table for him when he was being recruited. But no, it was actually really funny, because he gave this great story about how his track coach in seventh grade talked like the Penguin from Batman. And he put a dollar on the track, and he was trying to tell everybody how you're supposed to come out of the blocks low. And if you're low enough during the drive phase, you'll be able to reach down and grab the dollar. And, Rocket Ishmael was like, man, I was so poor at that time. I needed that dollar so bad. So I was the only one in the class who could come out fast enough and low enough. And I got that dollar. And this coach started going off about, man, you got shot out of them blocks like a rocket. And he said from that point on, his nickname was Rocket. And he still to this day, he introduces himself as Rocket Ishmael.
That's hilarious.
And part of it was because his track coach couldn't say Raghib, which I think is his actual given name. So it works out better for everybody.
But right. Everybody won.
Everybody won with that nickname.
And he didn't lose any eligibility by his track coach paying him a dollar every time he came out of the block.
That's right.
So that was a nice way to circumvent the NCAA process.
Right.
And here he is, College Football Hall of Fame.
College Football Hall of Fame. A lot of other great names that are in this class. Vince Young, London Fletcher, Cleveland's finest, one of the greatest people
Yes.
And players in NFL history, very deserving, making the College
Vince
Football
Young,
Hall of
former
Fame.
Cleveland Brown quarterback, great.
Vince Young, former great Cleveland Browner. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right. He had a cup of coffee with me in Cleveland. Didn't get to make the jersey, though, because he never actually played in a game with me.
Well, it's funny.
He was a practice guy in Cleveland.
That was the year that I came, and it was the offseason of 2014. And there was one time, you know, he's back there, he's passing, he takes off running.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is Vince Young.
Yeah.
And he went to, like, juke somebody and put a foot in the ground, and it looked like his hip popped out of place. And that's when I knew, okay, this isn't,
you're like,
this isn't the Hall of Fame
this
quarterback.
This is not the Vince Young I remember from the Rose Bowl running in on Pete Carroll's defense. This is the Pete Carroll.
Bob Wiley would have made a better change of direction.
Vince Young cut. Walker.
It's funny because, okay, so Rocket Ishmael, Rocket, we talked about Toledo. Can you guess how many college receiving yards I had?
You or Rocket?
Me, not Rocket.
Oh,
it's a good game because I'm going into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, like 2,500 or something like that, maybe. You know, if you had, let's say, 500 your sophomore year and then about 1,000 your junior and senior years, that would be my guess.
Yeah, so no.
Of course, a receiver would know exactly what his stats
are. I'm roughly around 632 yards career.
Are you serious?
It's my entire
career. No wonder
career.
You didn't get drafted. Short, slow,
zero
and
stats.
He's got no stats.
So it's funny because everyone's like, oh, you didn't do anything in the league. You only had, you know, 3,000 yards as a pro. That was the most yards I've ever.
Like,
I got better. Like, my college stats were better than my high school stats. I had like 175 career receiving yards in high school. And then I got more in college and more in Canada and then more in the NFL.
So what you were saying is you were lazy also in college because
I was saving myself.
You were saving yourself for bigger and better things.
I was like, I don't want to blow it all now. I'm going to wait till I actually get paid for it.
I wouldn't want to actually have yards against these MAC opponents that I'm significantly more talented than.
Even the guys who had 4,000 yards in the MAC didn't make it to the league. So what did that
you know, it probably says a lot more about the guy throwing you the football. So
yes.
Bruce Gradkowski, I know you listen
He's
to all of our shows. You are the reason
I'm not
that Hawk was not in the College Football Hall of Fame in this class. He's going next year.
Yeah.
But you're also the reason that Hawk didn't get drafted. So if you want to send a check to the Andrew Hawkins Family Foundation, Los Angeles, California, he lives in those mansions right next to LeBron.
Yep.
So
LeBron,
make sure.
Me, Oprah.
Send him that $5 million check that you owe him ASAP.
Yeah, man. So Torrey Holt. This is why Torrey Holt owes me money. Around that same time, in my quest to have more than 632 career receiving yards in college, you know, I wanted to be good, man. I wanted to be great. I wanted to have a leg up, you know. So I was up late one night in college. All my friends are probably out partying. It was like 12 a.m., and I see this infomercial for Torrey Holt. And he's like,
wait, he had an infomercial?
He had an infomercial.
That's fantastic.
Go look it up on
way.
YouTube. It has to be there. And it's like,
was he selling like,
do you want to know what it takes to be the best? I will show your receivers how to be the best, how to get the most out of their ability. I am an NFL wide receiver, and there is techniques that give you an advantage. So I'm like, hell yeah, I want all of that, Torrey. So, you know, I'm in college. I have $0, right? Like, I probably have $40 in my account.
You must not have been good at coming out of the blocks, or your track coach would have given you $1.
Exactly. I came out high every time, missed every buck. So I take $29.99 of my $46 in my account, and I order the Torrey Holt DVD because I'm like, you know what? The only way to get more money. It was like $29.99.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, all right, I'm going to get this, and I'm going to train with it. I'm like a sophomore junior in college, right? So I'm trying to get, like, I want league tutoring. I get this DVD, man. It was like if you were coaching receivers for a sixth grade flag football team, this DVD wouldn't have helped one of them. It was like,
what was so bad about it?
Make sure when you cut left to use your right foot. And I'm like, what?
You can't even cut left using left foot if you tried.
It's like when you're running in for a touchdown, don't slow down. I'm like, dude. And I didn't know how to return a DVD to an infomercial, so I ate it, and he owes me $30.
I'm so glad that you told me that story, because I've got a few questions for Tori tonight. One, how much did it cost to produce that award-winning video? Because I'm sure they won Oscars for that thing.
Obviously.
And two, how much money did you make? And then maybe the follow-up is going to be, by the way, you owe my man Hawk $29.99.
I think I said that to him once, like when I met him jokingly, like, hey, you owe me $30.
Sorry.
And it actually pissed him off, I think.
Oh,
he was kind
of
like...
Well, he was in a real cheery mood this morning. Right. Obviously, being inducted into the Hall of Fame is a big deal, and so he was excited about that. So maybe this is the right time to go after Hawk's money. Win Ben Stein's money back. When you said he was in an infomercial, maybe I thought for a second he was selling slap chops or something like that linguine guy that used to be on TV. Remember, he used to wear that headset
and
he was selling slap chops. I bet that guy's a billionaire right now. He's probably living in Hollywood next to you and Oprah.
I was the only slap chop in that situation for buying that stupid DVD. Do you like traveling?
I like traveling if I'm not doing a lot of it. Like if you had to travel every day for work or every week, it would definitely get annoying, and I would definitely miss being in that routine of being home. But like my Thursday night gig is nice because I travel Wednesday and I'm home on Friday, and it's almost the routine of it is something that I like. Because I playing in the NFL, I always got used to that routine, and I really always enjoyed that routine. And so having that is good. But if you are just randomly all over the place, traveling like different places, different times of the week, I think it would totally wear on me because my mind would just be so boggled. I can't keep stuff like that straight. I'm definitely a guy that can only think about one thing at a time. It's funny, like if I'm driving the car and I start talking to my wife, I like naturally just start slowing down, and she'll be like, honey, you're driving 10 miles under the speed limit. Stop talking to me. Because I physically, I am the biggest man of all time. I cannot talk and do and think about something else. It's pathetic.
Well, here's the thing about traveling with me. Over the last 3 years, I've probably taken, this is not an exaggeration, 50 plus trips where I fly across the country and I'm in the city for less than 24 hours and I fly back across the country.
You have insane travel.
So now I'm like so used to it that it's normal. So I literally landed in New York this morning and I'll be back in LA by late tonight. It affects me, I'm sure, like at the end of my life at some point. It's probably taking a day off every time I do that. But now I'm so used to doing it, it really doesn't.
Well, do you like to travel? So you asked me if I liked it, and I kind of gave you my answer, which was shitty. But do you enjoy that part of your job? I mean, you're so busy doing so many different things. I'm just a little chump, and I have such a small little bite at the media apple right now. I barely travel compared to you.
Yeah, no, I do like traveling. I don't like traveling as much as I do. But now
that makes no sense.
No,
you,
I like to
travel.
You
do like traveling, but you don't like traveling as much as you do?
Yeah, so if it was like in smaller increments.
So you're answering it the same way I did.
Yeah.
You would like it if it wasn't
Okay, I'll change it this. I wish I didn't travel as much as I do now. You don't travel a lot now. I did the same thing last Tuesday. Like our audio engineer was also my audio engineer for the same thing I did last Tuesday, and it was the
same.
In
New York City?
In New York City. In Manhattan. I was here for 13 hours and went right back to L.A.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
I do it in Atlanta. I've done it in I flew to Miami and right back. Like it's just,
so I'll tell you what I like about travel is because I'm such a foodie. I'm like the biggest food nerd. I just love to eat. And so the thing that I love the most about traveling and about the Thursday night gig is we're in a different city. And I usually try to find out, you know, what is this city known for? What do they really do a good job of? And go eat at a nice restaurant. And sort of enjoy the culinary scene there. And so we were in New York City last night with some friends, and we went to Catch Steakhouse, which is like this new steakhouse somewhere in Manhattan. I have no idea.
Yeah. Fancy.
I have no idea where it is, but it's fancy, and my financial advisor paid for it. So, of course, I racked up a huge bill eating all the best steaks. But it was like a really awesome dining experience. Now, they didn't have Mountain Dew on the menu, and they had no pizza. So I know you wouldn't have gone, but what do you love about traveling?
Making money.
Well, that works.
Because that's the only reason I'll do it. And that's why I fly back so quickly, because I travel so much.
I love
much.
To travel because I make money traveling.
Well, I travel so much. If I don't go right back, I would never see my kids. So I have to, like, that's the only way I could swing it is where, like, hey, it's essentially like I'm doing a long work day, babe. I'm going to go there. And I'm commuting across the country. It's funny because what time is it right now?
Your long work days are 36 hours?
Yeah. It's 1:53 right now. I haven't eaten since the meal they gave us before we taped Total Access yesterday, which was at...
So...
We were on at 8:15. We had a meal at 5:30.
Is this how
that
you
was the
did,
last time I've eaten.
Is this how you did your 10-day cut last summer, where you were able it to lose the weight because you just started traveling and you stopped eating?
Exactly. Yeah, I haven't. So I don't do it for the food. Also, Ketch has an incredible tomahawk steak. I had it on New Year's.
Thanks for telling me now.
Yep. Me and the wife went to Ketch on New Year's here in New York the last 2 years, and we get the tomahawk steak.
So outside of the financial benefit of traveling, is there anything else you enjoy about it? Like frequent flyer miles? Like you can take your kids on a nice Disney vacation in the off season?
There's nothing.
Nothing else.
It's a bottom line business. And I don't leave the United States.
Do they give you one of those little boosters for your feet so your feet don't dangle when
you're on the plane? I barely even sit in first class. I'm usually in the middle seat in the back of the plane. Both ways.
You can't tell me that NFL Network and Uninterrupted don't put you in first class. Or are you just such a small person that they figure they can save a little bit of money and you won't know the difference?
Well, that's just my personality anyway. Because not that I don't care, but I'm not like the, hey, I need to be first class travel. I'm not 6'7". It doesn't. I did get it last night because if I didn't, there was no way I would get any sleep.
Yeah, those red eyes are real tough.
It's funny because in the NFL, I mean, we travel a lot during the season.
But you don't notice it.
But you don't notice
it. Because it's like 24 hours.
And it's only...
And you're on a chartered plane.
Right. And everything is like, the elements are so controlled around you.
Yeah. It's like you get a 1 hour nap in a chair. That's basically what it is. Because you show up with your bag, you walk right onto the plane, you throw your little handbag. I know you had the fake Louis Vuittons.
I had the
Cabela's travel suitcase that I would throw in the overhead compartment.
Cabela.
Yeah, it's camouflage.
Yeah.
And then you close your eyes for an hour, and then most of the travel from Cleveland was short because you're pretty close to all those NFL cities, and so it's easy. Then you get there and you go to your hotel room and you maybe watch a little college football. You've got your meetings and your dinner, and then you go to bed and you wake up the next morning. You go to the stadium, play the game, and as soon as the game's over, you're home within an hour after the game plus whatever the travel time is. You know, so if you play in, let's say, Baltimore, it's an hour after the game. You're on the bus going to the airport, and then as soon as you get to the airport, everybody loads up the plane, and you're at home in an hour. So within 2.5 hours after the game in Baltimore, I'm home in my bed already.
Already.
So it doesn't really feel like travel when you have to travel with the normies. Like, we're traveling now, you know, with the NFL Network
and Uninterrupted. The Gin Pop.
All these people that have to suffer through regular travel, they don't get to fly privately.
Look, tell me this. What was your least favorite city to travel to?
So it was a combination, a tie between Detroit and Pittsburgh, and it had nothing to do with the city itself, but it had to do with the fact that we had to bus there.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, logistically, it would take more time if we got on a plane and flew to Pittsburgh, because the Pittsburgh airport is super far away from downtown.
Right.
You may know this being a Western PA guy, but I've never flown into Pittsburgh's airport. We always just got on the bus and drove like 2.5 hours. And most people think, oh, a bus drive is not that bad. But when you're a big guy, those coach bus seats are actually really small and uncomfortable, and I'm so long that I can't sit regular, so the only way I can fit is those seats is to kind of go diagonal, which would always jack up my back and my neck. And so at the end of every one of those trips, it was just a nightmare. And you can imagine playing a football game on a Sunday and then getting shoehorned into a coach bus for a 2.5-3 hour ride. As soon as you're done with that, you feel like you've been shoved into a suitcase for a month, and you can barely stand up, and you kind of hobble off the plane, and then you and I would go right into the cryo chamber to try to heal ourselves, which helped a little bit. But Detroit was the same issue, and so I hated those bus trips.
What about the train?
Especially home. The train was awesome.
You like the train?
I love the train. So the year we had Mike Pettine, we went and practiced against the Buffalo Bills in upstate New York, and we took the train from Cleveland because it was kind of a fun experience, they thought it would be. And I actually really liked it because those train cars, the Amtrak cars, are very comfortable. They're very large and roomy. You can look out the window. We got a chance to, you know, share some time with your brothers, with your friends on the team. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really cool. Actually, I know some of the guys hated it, but for me, looking out the train window, I just have like a part of me that's an old soul, and I really kind of enjoyed that.
I do like the train. I do like the train.
So all you like that trip.
And Coach... bus seats too are like first class seats to me, so I don't really give a shit. It's all the same.
Yeah. I'm actually taking the train on Wednesday because I'm going to go from New York City to Baltimore for the Thursday night game, which is the Baltimore Ravens versus the Jets. So instead of flying from New York to Baltimore, I'm going to just take the train. It's going to be a great little trip. I can't wait. If I can find out how to get to the train station and get on the right train.
It's easy.
Because it's not something that you do all the time. So
station,
there is like a learning curve. I feel like I'm that old person that's going to the airport for the first time in like 30 years, and I'm going to be there like 4 hours before my flight, all nervous because I don't know how everything goes, and I'm going to be taking my shoes off when I shouldn't. And it's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah, and the train, they might leave early.
Okay,
that happens.
Definitely going to be there 4 hours before my train leaves.
Dip on you. But the thing is, if you can make it, you just got to be there before it leaves, and you can get on. It's not like the
I'll be the guy running after it, like throwing my bag over the top and trying to get in the door. Ah, somebody open the door.
All right. My favorite part of traveling, not my favorite part, but it's just a story. So we always.
I didn't ask that question, by the way.
Yeah. Nope. Thank you. That's your broadcasting media chops. We would get per diem every time we traveled. So they would give you like, as you get on the plane.
I did like the per diem. That was a good
They would give you like an envelope of money. How much would it be? It'd be like 40 bucks a day.
It would be 37. It was always weird because you get like a 20, a 10, a 5, and a couple singles.
Yep.
And what we like to do, is this the story you're going to
tell?
This
is the story. Go ahead and run it because I'm going to tell you how I used to cheat.
Okay. So the quick version is $37 in an envelope is bad news for an NFL player because what do we want to do with it? The first thing we want to do is gamble it away.
Yep, unless you're Rocket Ishmael, then you save
because,
those dollars.
I mean, who spends cash anyway anymore? You're spending credit cards, so you either want to walk off that plane with like $1,000 in your hand or nothing. There's no in-between. It doesn't do you any good. So what we used to do is we'd play this game. I don't even know if it had a name, but the kickers or the specialists would usually organize it, mm-hmm. and they would get a bag, like a barf bag, basically, from the stewardess, and everyone would write their numbers on the $20 bills that they got and would stuff them in the bag, and they would walk up and down the aisle, and the trainers would play, the coaches would play, like everybody would get in, and then you'd have the stewardess right before the plane was going to take off would pull one bill out, and usually that first person would get their 20 back, and then the next bill that got pulled out, they would get the whole bag of money. And so if everybody on the plane was participating, you'd usually get like $1,000 or something, which was real money. That's great. So now go ahead with your story.
I would put multiple 20s in there, and then sometimes me and other teammates would all put one number on multiple 20s and just split it as a team instead of having just the $20.
So it's not really cheating it because you are increasing your odds, but you're also paying the same ratio as everybody else is.
But I won 3 times doing it that way.
So I won twice, and one time I got screwed. And I'm going to tell you the quick version of that. We had this running back named Armand Smith, and sometimes we would have the rookies be the ones that would pull.
Okay.
And so the first number that came out of there was Gary Barnage, I think. So Gary got his money back. The next one that he pulls out, he looks at it and it's my number. And so he says over the microphone with the stewardess, he goes, "Mr. $84 million, because I had just signed that week my second contract, which was reported, which was incorrect, but was reported to be $84 million.
Right.
And so he says, "Mr. $84 million," but because he was speaking into like the microphone that the stewardess was using and the players were all in the back of the plane, all we heard was 84. So Jordan Cameron, who was 84 at the time, walks up, takes the bag of money, and Armand Smith, being a rookie, didn't say anything about it. It just gave him the bag of money. And so we didn't even find out that I was the one that was supposed to win until the next day. And at that time, there was so much controversy swirling around who actually was supposed to get the money.
Nobody felt bad for you.
Yeah, he gave me the money and was like, "Dude, you just signed a new deal. Can't I just keep it?"
Yeah.
And so you kind of feel bad about it. So
that's the move I would expect him to make.
That was the 2 times that I won the grab bag of money. And now apparently Hawk owes me some money too. So if I got that money from Torrey Holt tonight, I'm definitely keeping it because I feel like you cheated me in some way out of my grab
bag. Hey, man. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. We need to talk about the Patriots. Should we talk about the Patriots?
Your career with the Patriots or just the Patriots in general?
The Patriots in general.
Their season's over and Tom Brady's dead. And no, there's no chance.
They were taping the Bengals practice.
So,
or pregame,
I read
something.
The report.
Okay, what is your take from the report?
Supposedly, what happened was they're doing a documentary on their scouts,
right?
Their scouts who go to the stadium, which doesn't make sense to me because there's no way NFL teams still send their scouts to go watch other teams play in the stadium. We have this thing called video in modern technology where you can watch the games on TV, or you could just watch the video that every team in the NFL has of all the plays of every game. So it makes no sense that they had a scout in the stadium, but supposedly the Browns gave them permission to have a documentary crew recording the four scout for the Patriots that was there to scout the Bengals. Uh-huh. Now, what's your take on that? What did you hear?
You know what? Like, from the story I heard, a Bengals personnel member or media or something noticed somebody in a Patriots shirt filming. Like,
like with the old school dad VHS on the shoulder video recorder.
And I've gone back and forth with this so many times. And they said that when they asked him, he identified himself as someone who's worked for Mr. Kraft. Right? So I'm like, okay,
who do you work for? Who does number two work for? I'll never tell you.
It's a funny story because
Bob Kraft said he'd kill me. I mean, my boss said he'd kill me if I ever told anybody.
So there was really an interrogation.
Did they tie him up? Like that, James Bond.
They took him into a room.
They cut a hole in the bottom of the seat, and they tied him down naked and started hitting him with the rope with the knot on the end.
They put him in a room, and they like made him show him the video. They questioned him.
They showed him the video?
Did
they have good cop, bad cop?
Yeah, they confiscated the video. They said the guy tried to get them like, hey, just delete the footage and let's just go our separate ways. They were like, no. And so it was like it's like a thing. And I'm trying to wrestle with, okay, if I'm in charge of spying for the Patriots, would I wear a Patriots shirt? I don't know, right? And then if someone asked me who I work for, would I then say Mr. Kraft? So the Patriots have said they were a third-party production company that was doing the filming for this documentary, and they're not really a part of the Patriots organization. They don't know the NFL rules, blah, 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 blah.
Seems but fishy then I'm to you, like, huh? You said Ray Farmer got suspended 4 games for text messaging from the sideline.
Yes.
What is this going to be for the Patriots?
I don't know, because for the last one, they lost a first-round pick?
I forget what the punishment was for, but I remember I played with Hank Fraley my rookie year, and he was on the Eagles team that lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and he was certain that the Patriots had their openers because they were watching their walkthrough or taping. I think this was after the Spygate stuff, but he was certain that the Patriots screwed him out of the Super Bowl win because they had somehow infiltrated and recorded their practice or watched their openers or somehow got a hold of it and knew what they were running at the beginning of the game.
Bad news. It's bad news, man.
Either way, the Patriots are always trying to take an advantage. And I remember my rookie year, Romeo Crennel was our head coach. And when we went back to New England, I'm not saying anything, but I'm saying that all of a sudden we had a lot more security people around our hotel that were hired by the Browns, that were hired by Romeo. We had a lot more people that were much more sensitive about leaving your playbook around in the hotel. We had security guards outside of our locker room door that never happened anywhere else. So you know that when we were going back to New England, Romeo was like, I know what goes on here,
right?
And I'm not going to let him do it to me now that I'm an opposing coach. Because we had heard from, as you have heard, you know, throughout the NFL circles, that the Patriots would always send somebody to the hotel after the team was there and just walk through the meeting rooms and make sure that nothing was left there, because if anything got left there, they'd pick it up and it would go back to the Patriots. Just like in the locker room, everybody's got their playbook, you've got your openers, you've got your scripted plays, and if nobody's attending the locker room door, they would send one of their locker room attendants in, and he wouldn't even have to steal it. You could just take a quick picture of their first 15 plays, and now all of a sudden the Patriots defense is a lot more well prepared for the openers that you're going to be running. And so whether that happened or not, I'm not sure, but Romeo seemed real concerned when we were going to New England to make sure that it wasn't going to happen to us.
Well, Mangini, who comes from the Patriots school of
cheating,
coaching,
I mean coaching,
of cheating slash coaching, well, he was with the Jets. My brother was there. My brother told me the story.
Well, that's why.
Go ahead.
Belichick hated Mangini when he went to the Jets, because supposedly Mangini was the one that snitched on him for recording practice and spying. But that may be your story. Sorry for
saying. So no, that's not the story, but it does play into that, because my brother had a watch stolen from him in the locker room with the Jets, right? So somebody stole his watch out of his locker. And so he goes to the security, like, tell him, hey, somebody stole my watch, man, like, you know, a couple $1,000s or whatever it was. And he said, like, a couple days later, they bring him up there and basically show him the video of who it was. Like, yo, here he is. And they end up, they cut the guy, send him home, blah, blah, blah. He said he wasn't even thinking about the watch. All he was thinking about was, motherfuckers have cameras in the locker room? Like, you're not supposed to have cameras in the locker room. So
a little
ever since he told
privacy.
Me that story, I've always been of the mind that I think every organization has recording devices in the locker room. Because if I had $80 million, which is what's the salary cap? $180 million?
Right now? Back then it was probably 100.
Yeah. Okay.
But now it's 180 or
so. If I have $180 million in a room, which is essentially what an NFL team is, right?
Yeah, you're going to watch it a little bit.
Would I record it?
Yeah, you'd watch
would
it.
Would I want to know what's going on
you'd
in there?
You want to know what's going on.
Come on, man. So.
So the quick story, when Mangini took over, it was my third season. And all of a sudden, we had this building remodel that went on in the off season, and all of a sudden, all the meeting rooms had microphones and cameras. All the hallways had microphones and cameras. The weight room had a microphone and a camera. And I remember all the players were like, oh, they're watching us. They're trying to listen to everything we do, which they were.
Yeah, because
if you went up into Mangini's office, he had like the full video board. Like he was a night mall cop security guard. And so he could watch and listen to every room to see what was going on, what the coaches were coaching. And from his standpoint, he was like, I just want to know and make sure everybody's on the same page. And I want to be able to tap into any room when I'm up in my office and hear what they're talking about, hear what they're, teaching. But we had some players that were texting in a meeting, like kind of under the table, you know, they had their phone. And Mangini brought one of them up and was like, hey, why were you on your phone in the meeting? He's like, I wasn't on my phone. And he showed him the video. He's like, look, I can zoom in and I could read what you were texting during the meeting on your phone. So stop texting or I'm going to find you the next time you do it. Isn't that some Big Brother stuff?
It's a shocker that Eric Mangini didn't work out as a head coach.
Yeah, right. But I actually love Eric now. I think he does a great job on Fox Sports. Yeah. I've got a good relationship. He's a very nice person, extremely bright football mind, but extremely controlling when he was the head coach and definitely tried to play the Bill Belichick role when he was in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Today's show is sponsored by The Athletic, a subscription-based sports news site for real fans. Through in-depth coverage from local writers on every team, plus national writers you already know like Jay Glazer, Mike Sando, and Michael Lombardi, The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news.
There are no ads, pop-ups, or clickbait, just great sports writing that tells the story behind the story. You can get exclusive player profiles, deep dives on analytics, team power rankings, and fantasy sports insights you won't find anywhere else. Each subscriber gets a personalized feed of stories, live writer Q&As, podcasts, and more.
Just download the Athletic app, pick your favorite teams, and the Athletic will bring you all of the latest storylines on all the players that matter to you.
Ready to get started? Get your 40% off a yearly subscription to The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/tomahawk. That's theathletic.com/tomahawk. You know who didn't try to play the Bill Belichick role because of segues? Kyle Rudolph. Let's give him a call.
Wednesdays are for the players.
Travis Kelce.
This entire time I thought it was Tomahawk.
Tomahawk. Kareem Jackson.
Yeah.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Do I believe in ghosts?
Yeah.
Ooh. Here we go. Saquon.
One, two, three, four.
I declare thumb war.
Do you think, Ma? Let's get it.
The Tomahawk Show.
All right. Now joining us here at the Tomahawk Show, we have the best tight end to ever play in the NFL, Kyle Rudolph of the Minnesota Vikings in the building. Kyle, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. A bit of a reach there, but I appreciate it. Always good to talk to you guys.
Nonsense, Kyle. All right, listen. The Vikings have been rolling. You guys are in prime position heading into the playoffs. What has been kind of the feeling in the locker room, understanding what you guys have in front of you?
Well, it's big in the NFC. You know, you got to keep track with the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Saints. You know, for us in our division, we got the Packers right there, a game up on us right now. So you kind of look at the landscape and how things are going to shake out. It's important for us to go out each and every week and keep pace. You know, these teams are going out each and every week and taking care of their business, and we have to do the same thing. Thankfully for us, we have three division games here in the month of December. We were able to take care of business last week at home against the Lions, and it doesn't get any easier for us. We go on the road to the Chargers this week.
Kirk Cousins, one of the most talked about quarterbacks in the NFL, but we're not going to talk about his play on the field right now. I need to know all about his nickname, Kid Cuzzy. Are you buying or are you selling the nickname Kid Cuzzy for your man Kirk Cousins?
I had not heard that.
Oh, a tomahawk first. I like it.
I'd have to sell it. You can't be called Kid Cuzzy and roll around in an excursion van with advertising on the side of it. That's just those two don't go together.
What kind of advertising does he have on the side of his van?
It was the I can't think of the name of the company, and you know, I should get a plug for him on here or something. But
yeah, you could make millions. There's millions of people out there listening. So if you had to come up with a nickname that was more fitting for your man Kirk Cousins than Kid Cuzzy, what would it be?
Put me on the spot here, Joe. Man, I mean, I feel like all of the obvious ones are along the lines of like his dad humor. You know, if you went like Cuzzy Dad or something like that, or maybe like Cuzzy Daddy.
Cousin Dad might be the funniest nickname I've ever heard in my life. And that actually does fit Kirk perfectly. Well, let's jump back to his play on the field. He went through a little bit of a tear this year where he was balling out. There were even people talking about he could be in the running for MVP. What have you seen from him that you're like, man, I know this is a guy that can take us to the next level we need as a team?
I think the biggest thing, you look at our offense in year two with Kirk and things we're trying to do offensively from a schematic standpoint. Obviously, it starts with running the football, and you know, we'd be remiss without mentioning Dalvin Cook in that category. But when we're able to run the football and then we can move Kirk around in the play action game, in the boots and naked, that's when Kirk's most comfortable. Last year, you know, we got, for us offensively, we put ourselves behind the eight ball way too many times, and we got into a lot of drop back passes. And Joe, you can attest to this. There's nothing worse than an offensive lineman and you're protecting 42 drop back passes in a game. I mean, it's just, it's not fair to those guys up front. The rushers in this league are too talented and too good. So for us, we've been able to stay balanced. And when we're balanced and we have that run-pass game going, it allows Kirk to move around. And he's not always in the same spot every time. He throws the ball really well on the run. And that's allowed Kirk to play well this year.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned that. I mean, we talked about, me and Joe, when we were in Cleveland, we had a similar situation where we were just throwing the ball. And like you said, in the NFL, you cannot throw the ball that much and win. You need balance. You need to keep your defense off the field. You need to help out the guys protecting your quarterback in the pass game. Dalvin Cook has been balling this year. And I'm sure Joe's going to follow up with some football questions. But I have one more question before I kick it off about Mike Zimmer, who is a maniac. Right? He's funny story about Mike. I was in Cincinnati. He was our D coordinator. I forget which linebacker we had signed that offseason, but he was our big name signing at the time. $7 million a year for a linebacker was a lot of money. And I just remember something happened on the field. They run off. And this is my first interaction with Mike Zimmer ever. He pushes me out of the way to get to this linebacker. And he shows him like the printout. And he says, "We paid your ass $7 million a year for this? You got to be shitting me. You suck." And just walked off. And I'm like, yo, is that really how coaches talk to people? So I can't imagine he's changed that much. Cal, do you have any good Mike Zimmer stories for me?
You know, coach has calmed down a little bit since his time down there in Cincinnati. Born and raised in Cincinnati, so all kinds of great stories when we got coached about, I can't believe it's been 6 years already. But, you know, when you're a coach and you take over a team and organization, most of the time you're taking over a team because they weren't good before you got there. And you have to establish your culture and your identity. You know, he did that early on. You know, he was tough on us. He was hard on us. We had a young team. So he had to kind of lay his foundation. And I feel like now we've been together for 6 years. You look at our roster, the core group of our roster has all been here for that 6 year tenure. And, you know, now you have a bunch of guys that are in year 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 instead of year 1, 2, 3, 4. So he's eased up on us a little bit. He's not quite as hard as he used to be. he takes care of us a little more.
So this is your first year in what people would call the Kyle Shanahan type offense. Both Hawk and I played for Kyle when we were in Cleveland together, and I think I can speak for both of us in saying that was our favorite offense that we played in. Everything just fit together so well, the run, the pass, the balance, the way you understood why it was important for the receivers to block a certain way, get your hat on a certain side of the defender. Everything was detailed out in a really specific manner. You played in a bunch of offenses throughout your career. How do you like this offense that you guys have this year compared to those other offenses you've played in the NFL?
Well, I mean, you hit it when you said everything fits together so perfectly, the run, the pass, play action, the nakeds. I think for us, we really got an experience of that this offseason going against our defense. You know, we've always had a great barometer going against our defense. They've been in the top five in the NFL just about every year since Coach Zim's been here. And you know, we know when we're going to be good offensively, when we're having success against those guys. And this offseason, going against them with this Shanahan, Kubiak offense, it was like after every period, they'd come over the sideline and, like, it all looks the same. Like, we can't tell what you guys are doing. We used to be able to just pin our ears back and rush the passer, and now we don't know whether it's a run, a pass. I think that's the biggest thing about this offense is just, that's why it's so important to be able to run the football, because when you can run the football, everything else looks the same and fits in off of that.
Yeah, you guys have had one of the better defenses in the NFL for a little while, but it's almost flipped this year where the offense in Minnesota has played at the same level or even better than your defense at times this year. How has that been for you guys on offense to feel like you're carrying a lot of the load now and you're helping out the defense, whereas in years past, sometimes it felt like the defense was the thing that was carrying the Vikings?
Well, I think for us, and part of the reason why there was so much frustration early in the year, and, you know, obviously everybody heard all the stories coming out of Minnesota, it was because we feel like we have so much talent on this offense, and we weren't reaching our expectations. And, yeah, the defense has been so good around here for so long, and, you know, we felt like we weren't pulling our weight to help us win football games. And, you know, really from that point on, week four, after we lost – in Chicago, you know, we really started clicking, and we're getting the most out of each one of our guys, whether it's Dalvin, Stephon, young receivers stepping up in Adam Thielen's absence, tight ends making big plays. It's the biggest thing for us is we've always felt like we've had the talent to be right up there with our defense. Like I said, we go up against these guys every day in practice. And now we're starting to put it on tape and go out there each and every week and make plays to help our team win games.
There was a lot made from a national level about the relationship with Stephon Diggs and Kirk Cousins and some speculation that Stephon wanted to be traded early on in the season. But it seems like that has really been tamped down, and they've got a great relationship now that you guys are rolling on offense. How have you seen that relationship and Stephon's desire to be in a Vikings uniform change through the course of the season?
Well, as you guys know, you know, you both played a long time in this league. When you're not winning football games, you know, guys are frustrated, and you know, it has nothing to do with I've never met a wide receiver that's any good that doesn't want the football. Everybody wants the football. You want to make plays. You want to help your team win. And we weren't winning games. You know, we started the season 2-2, and that's certainly not where any of us thought we would be through four games. And I think that was the biggest thing early. Everybody from the outside saw all these frustrations and personalities shining through, and it was just frustration. We weren't living up to expectations. And then, as you guys know, winning seems to cure all in this league. So when we started winning football games and, you know, guys were able to make plays to help our team win games, all that kind of goes by the wayside.
All right, now it's time for some hard-hitting questions, Kyle. You're a Cincinnati kid, born and raised. A lot of memories from growing up watching the Bengals, I'm sure. Probably a lot of sad memories, depending on exactly what you're pinpointing there. Big question. My take is Andy Dalton has a better Bengals career than Carson Palmer. If I had to pick one quarterback for the Bengals, and I grew up a Bengals fan too because my brother played from 98 to 2004, I'm taking Andy over Carson. You're a Cincinnati kid. Am I an idiot or do you agree?
I think there's a couple different takes that you can go on that one. And, you know, so for me, Carson was there towards like the end of my elementary school and high school. I remember being a sophomore, and that was when Carson tore his ACL against the Steelers in that playoff game. Yep. And to me, I think you could argue that was one of the best offenses ever, and probably the Bengals' best shot at winning it all. And but with that being said, you go back and look at Andy's career over the last 9 years and the success that he's had over the course of 9 years. Carson had a lot of success there towards the end of his career, but it's hard to argue the sustained success. Obviously, you take neither one of them ever won a playoff game in Cincinnati. But like I said, I grew up watching those teams with Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, TJ Hudson-Zada, Chris Henry, and they were a lot of fun to watch and had a ton of weapons. So,
so you got to make a decision. Which one you're going? You're going Carson?
I'm going Carson. Yeah.
Oh. All right, we'll let you get that one. Kyle, we're going to let you go, man. We appreciate you joining us on the Tomahawk Show. Your second appearance, man. Two times, because we liked it so much the first time, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Good luck down the stretch, brother.
Well, that was our man Kyle Rudolph, the great tight end from the Minnesota Vikings. As you aptly put it, the best tight end in NFL history outside of maybe Travis Kelce. But I think that's 1A and 1B when you're talking about tight ends.
Yeah, man. It's, pick your poison.
Well, I think that pretty much does it for today's show. But I think we got to pick the catchphrase game for this week. Last Thursday night football game of the season for me. So it's going to be my last opportunity of the football season to be able to throw those catchphrases out there. So this is going to be an important one. We've got four finalists. I think what we need to do is pick two of them.
Okay.
And then we'll put it on Twitter and we'll let the fans, we'll let the Tomaflock decide what is the catchphrase of the week. So if you're ready, I'm going to go ahead and read the four finalists. We've got like a skid loader stuck in the mud. Sometimes you got to watch the bread rise. Don't forget the gift receipt. Or like an astronaut eating a ribeye, the stakes have never been higher. And the fans in the room here, which is my wife, Annie, and our audio engineer just laughed because they apparently really like number four.
Like an astronaut eating a ribeye, the stakes have never
I would like
been
to
higher.
Make a request and an change edit? That to like an astronaut eating a tomahawk steak. Like an astronaut eating a tomahawk, the stakes have never been higher.
Bingo. I don't know. I mean, do
all
we
right,
even
so that's
need
a
to
finalist.
Vote?
We just need one more out there.
Okay.
Out of those three remaining ones.
You like the skid loader?
No.
Oh, shocker.
Like a skid loader stuck in the mud.
That's thought for sure that was what you were going to ride with.
Yeah.
What are you going with?
I'm
going
to go with don't forget the gift receipt. Okay, I think that'd be funny. It's the holiday season. Whoop-dee-whoop. A-doodly-dee. Ba-da-da-ba-ba.
Okay, I forgot you like to sing holiday Christmas carols.
Yeah, I like Christmas carols. So. Well, anyways, that's it for the show. Go ahead and vote on our Twitter page at Tomahawk Show or Instagram or wherever the hell you get our social media stuff. And let us know which catchphrase is going to be the catchphrase of the week. I think it's pretty obvious what one is going to win, but I'm interested to see how much it wins by. So right. I think we'll be back next week with our normal Sunday Tuesday show because both of us will be back and to our regularly scheduled homes in Los Angeles and Wisconsin. So until then, I guess, Hawk, why don't you give me your final thoughts since this is a little bit of a topsy-turvy Tuesday episode?
Final thoughts. I don't do final thoughts. So,
I know.
My brain is wrecked and I have nothing. So
that's a great final thought.
Final thoughts are...
Give me a Torrey Holt final thought.
Pay me my damn $29.99 back, Torrey Holt.
Do you remember the name of the video?
I don't. It was probably like...
Torrey Holt's keys
Torrey
to
Holt.
Success.
Receiver... Power.
That's a good one. All right, well, I think that does it for today's show. Why don't you take us out?
Joe Hawk yourself, kids.